Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I have changed the green screen around here. At some point, I'm going to get the real green screen up, but I have these really cool pictures of Baltimore that I've not had a chance to share, and I have a real artist on now, a sports camera artist, but a longtime friend of mine through rock and roll, and if I'm wearing my Rush sweatshirt, you know I'm about to wax about all things, September 26, 1980. A Saxon open for Rush at the Capitol Center. A very young Nestor was there with the spirit of radio. Scott Norton has been my friend for a long time. We've attended a lot of Rush concerts together. He attended a lot of Ravens and Orioles games together as well. A lot of part as well. And he does sports and rock and roll. Dude, I don't even know what other music you're into. Because I've never heard you talk about any other band. Like, I've never heard you talk about Genesis or Yes or the kinds of bands that would be related to Rush or Triumph or that you listen to 98 Rock or that you saw the Stones. Do you listen to any other band besides Rush? I need to know this.
Yes, I do. And
good to
just
know.
A couple other bands. Love Level 42. You guys probably know one song by them.
I know Something About You and I know Lessons in Love. So that's two songs.
Yeah. Great.
They were a jazz band, correct?
They were like a poppy type of,
but they were jazz. They were more like Steely Dan than probably you realize as musicians.
I tend to go for, the musically inclined type of music that's, I call like Rush staying power, it's stuff that you're going to listen to and be like, man, that's great. Not stuff that might sound great today. And then 3 months later, you're like, click. And you change the channel.
When did you discover Rush, man? Because, I only know you. Like, people say, why are you having Norton on the show? Because, a lot about baseball. You know a lot about football. Like, you'd be an educated caller for sure in the old days. But, when it comes to Rush, you've always known more and cared more than I do, and you talk it up with me because you know I care enough. You also know that I've sort of waved in and out of various points of being really interested. And lately, and I'm like it with music all the time. I'm not obsessed with any one thing, right? That's what Baltimore Positive is all about, right? I'm sort of obsessed with all sorts of things. Crab cakes are going to be my obsession this summer, but between baseball and football and girls and music and travel and all the things I'm into, Rush stands, I think, as the one of the enduring things in my life. Like, Styx is there from a music standpoint. Early on, when I was 10 years old, did I still love it as much at 52? Because I don't love baseball as much. You know that. The Ravens are about to find out I don't love them as much as I used to because they don't love me as much as they used to. So, life changes. But Rush has been one of those things for me, and I know for you, that has intensified in some way because the words you read on an album sleeve in Signals in 1982, they mean a lot more to you when you're 52, I think.
Well, I mean, I listen to a Rush tune now, song that I've listened to for 30 plus years. And I'm like, oh my God, that's what
I didn't hear that.
About.
Yeah.
You know?
I've been reading Neil's lyrics, and I know you, if anybody saw the segment with Mike Wargo, if you missed it, please go grab it. Carolina Mike was my my intern in 1990, whatever, who was also a Rush fan and a drummer as well. And we had a great chat about things. And I know you caught that. And I guess it rings your bell. And I wanted to invite you on. And this all started because of Mickey Coachella. I started talking to Mickey and started thinking rock and roll. Oh, thank you. And well, it's great because he was great. When I have great guests, the show's great. When the guests are no good, I stink too. And we started talking about music, and I thought, you know what? It's time. If they're opening the record and they're opening places and this new coupe, I don't even know what the hell coupe is. If you know anything about coupe, call me. But all my musician friends, Jason Seamer's on this week, and it's just music is – and here's the really weird thing, and I've gotten emotional about this. We're never seeing Rush again, dude. Music's going to come back, and Rod Stewart may shake his ass at Merriweather, and I may get a beer, and Cheap Trick might show up without Bunny Carlos, and I hope Tom Peterson's doing well after his open heart surgery. But we're never going to see Rush again, and that's the last time I saw Rush was with you. And the last thing I did with Rush to interact was buy this, which I'm very, very happy I bought.
I'm glad I talked you into it because you were like, $100. I was like, do it. I'm glad you did. So
You did talk me into it, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
My and favorite. You know
that inspired me to finally buy my Rush sweatshirt. The next tour, I'm Was it
No, it wasn't the next tour, because this is the last tour.
Yeah.
This was the 40.
An old one. The Clockwork Angels. I dug that one out.
I went online to see if I could buy another one. I can't find this one. This one, if you ever find this one in a medium, I buy it again, like all over again. It is the best sweatshirt I've ever owned. When I went to get my Baltimore Positive gear, I'm like, make the sweatshirt of this quality. I mean, it's an unbelievable piece. And when I walk around with it, let me turn around here if I can do that on the camera. When I turn around, you know, like people, my wife and I went to Kennett Square, Pennsylvania last summer for our anniversary, socially distanced. We'd never been to Longwood Gardens, beautiful outdoor garden. And it was a little chilly morning. And we're driving up in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania, like no offense, up by like the Hers potato chip factory, you know, like up Route 1, up above Conowingo, above Rising Sun. And I pull in a little farm square and I ordered a little breakfast on the road and I'm wearing this. And the girl, and it was a woman, because you rush, you always get pigeonholed into men, white guys that, you know, stayed home alone a lot, you know, were the Captain Jack of Billy Joel's, you know, like, and maybe some of that's true from a Rush standpoint, but this girl's like, I love Rush. I love that sweatshirt. I would so own that sweatshirt. Can I touch it? Like she was all about it. And we're wearing masks. You know, my wife went to use the restroom. She came out of the restroom. She's like, hey, I had a breakfast call. I'm like, man, that girl loved my Rush sweatshirt, man. And she's like, and it happens when I wear it, people yell at me. You know, like they yell at me literally.
Yeah. I love it. I want to tell you about how I got into my Rush. And
I can't wait to hear this, because I don't know any of this, dude.
This
all I know is you showed up and there's a picture of me with Alex Lyson and Geddy Lee that I swear it's you, and you tell me it's not you, and I'm like, it's you, dude. It looks just like you.
Okay.
Whoever that dude is.
So I guess it was early 80s, and I'm in eighth grade, and I hear,
where'd you go to school?
Even before that, I heard Abacab at my brother's house, and I was like, wow, and I always, from my memory, it was like my gateway into
Genesis,
like,
was your gateway to Rush.
But it was just that one song. I heard these big keyboards, and then I started hearing, you know, paying a little bit more attention to Rush and borrowing my, you know, buddies' records one at a time.
Eighth grade. Where were you? What high school did you go to?
I went to St. Anthony's at that time.
St. Anthony's. Okay. Where's that?
It's Frankfurt and Bel Air Road.
I was going to say, I was going to call Bel Air Edison sort of that area. Okay.
Gardenville.
Gardenville. Perfect. Yeah.
So I started like getting in and borrowing a record and like recording two or three songs here, getting another record from my buddy, Dave Wolf, who, you know,
would albums though, not eight tracks, not cassettes. Right. Okay.
Albums. So recording and then little by little getting into it that way. And then one day I was.
Was it Signals? When is this?
Signals. Yeah.
Exit Stage Left's already out.
Yeah. So.
Okay. You came a little later. Fair enough.
Signals. Okay. And, you know, like with my brother back then, 90 Rock had the People's Choice. And, you know, I remember borrowing.
10 o'clock every night.
Yeah. I remember borrowing my brother's cassette and like listening. I think it was Closer to the Heart, Red Barchetta. And I don't forget what else.
Probably Tom Sawyer then. That's what they played on the radio. Yeah.
So little by little, I was like, huh, what's going on here? And then one day I'm walking home, I'm on Frankfurt Avenue, and I hear this dude playing drums and he's ripping it up. So I stood outside this kid, it was right next to Gardenville Elementary.
You grew up by the Musical Exchange, not, what was it called? No, Bart had there was Vinyl Discoveries.
Oh.
Vinyl Discoveries was.
I got my Vinyl Discovery stories. I mean, I got like. That's another.
I hung. You know how many hours I spent in Vinyl Discoveries on the down from the Hacienda? Oh my God!
I have stuff in. I pulled some stuff out, and that's another thing that I would go down to Vinyl and just check out. You know, and they knew who I was. And
Bart ran Vinyl, man. I knew Bart forever when I was a music critic in the 80s.
This is one thing that I bought there. Still have it. Just a little 45, like little things. So I want to get back. I'm walking home. I'm listening to
drums.
Ripping up the drums. So I got up the guts to knock on the kid's door. And his name was John Thamakos. I don't know if you guys know him. Great drummer. Plays with Eddie Lauer. Two of the best people around. I've known those guys forever. But John I'm like, hey man, I hear you're, you know, playing some good drums down there. And one thing led to another. And he's like, come on in. So we went down there. We've been lifelong friends ever since. John would, he was playing the Rush in sixth grade. I met him like seventh, eighth grade, easy. And we just hit it off. And, you know, that's where I looked down. I was like, oh, it was like the Holy Trinity of, you know, all these Rush posters, which I eventually bought from him and, you know, still have down in my basement, believe it or not. And, you know, no, they're not hung up on the wall or anything. But so that guy just really just showed me even more. And I, from then, appreciated all the music that Rush was putting out and still love to this day. And they'll be part of my heart forever. I've seen them 50 plus times in concert.
Have you ever seen any of the stuff with the guy in Buffalo that's the archivist? Like, yes. I want to invite him on the show. If you got an email or a contact on him, I want to bring him on. I literally, if there weren't a plague, I was going to try to look him up and visit with him because he has boots and tapes and like stuff like that. And the band uses him in the videos and stuff. He's just a dude I probably should have on the show. I started following, what's the lady who was the at the radio station?
Donna Halper.
Donna Halper. I started following her on Twitter as well. I want to invite her on. You know, I got a little Rush fascination, and I have this time in my life to open conversations up with people like you. And if Rush fans want to come get it, if not, if you don't understand the Rush thing, I'm trying to understand it more. And I think the unique nature of Rush against all of the other bands. And I think I talked to Jason Seamer about this the other day in Chasing U2 Around, is that, you know, Bono and those guys have never not performed together. They've never performed with anybody else. They've never side albumed or broke off the band or went the Sting route or whatever. Rush was also that kind of band that was only known as an ensemble. I mean, Getty, by the way, and I showed this, I got rid of all of my stuff. I still have the bobbleheads because you gave me those. I'm not getting rid of those. I have those. I don't have anywhere to display them, but I have them, and I love the kimonos. But Getty signed the my favorite headache here, so I still have the Getty autographed covered, by the way, a CD. But
I have that shirt. And if I got that shirt in my other room, you give me 30 seconds, I'll pull it out.
I want a Rash shirt. I don't have a Rash shirt, but
I have one of them too.
Yeah. I mean, I go through the store once in a while, and my wife got me a belt buckle, beautiful, yeah. Not an original Pacifica one, modern one. Very nice. I wear it. It goes with everything. It's really badass and throwback and cool. So I have the sweatshirt. I have a shirt. You know, when I was a boy, I went to, this old amusement park that's not there anymore, up in the middle of Pennsylvania. If somebody mentioned it to me, but it was in the middle of nowhere, and I won the mirror that was the 2112. It was black and silver. Not that. Yeah. No, hold it up. Let me see that. Don't. If you have props, you got to use the props here.
Oh, okay. I got tons. What do you want?
Mine was like that, but it was black in the background, not mirror. So it wasn't really a mirror. It was more of a reflective piece. And I don't know what the hell happened to it. It was a piece of glass. Honestly, it's probably broken. I had a Grace Under Pressure, you know, poster on the wall. But I interviewed Getty on the Grace Under Pressure tour in 1984 at the News American. There's the shirt. That's beautiful. Hold that. Let me pull. You have to talk in order for you to come to the screen. So,
believe it or not, this is the original one. It
was, I can tell from the jersey cut. Yeah. That was $14 if you wanted the t-shirt. It was $12 and it was very overpriced at the time. So yep. It was crazy. My dad would be like, you spent how much on that AC/DC For Those About the Rock shirt? Uh-huh. How much was that Styx t-shirt? I stopped getting shirts early on. And now those things are worth $250 or whatever. Really? So I interviewed Getty on the Grace Under Pressure tour right after I interviewed Tom Hamilton from Aerosmith. It was my second interview. I actually had the tape of it, and at some point things disappeared from WNST against my will. They were borrowed, lifted, disappeared. So some of my old tapes like that are missing. But I interviewed Getty, embarrassed myself because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And then I went down to the Capitol Center and I actually met him. He was playing baseball backstage underneath the Capitol Center, playing catch. And like winging it with his long hair. His hair was like this at that time. Signals tour, you know, it was after Signals. It's Grace Under Pressure. And then after that.
Hold Your Fire.
Hold Your Fire. I did not interview them on that. And Yeah, I did not interview them on that. I remember reviewing the album at the Evening Sun. I don't remember having any interview. I interviewed a lot of bands. Maybe they weren't doing Media or Polygram. Who knows at that point, right? There wasn't a whole lot of guitars on the albums, as I remember then. Alex probably didn't want to talk about it so much. But you have scoured the earth for Rush interviews, memorabilia, stuff like that. I have a couple of tapes of Geddy calling and talking baseball with me in the 90s. Geddy was at an Oriole game that I was at, and I went down and chatted with him one time. And my random weird Geddy thing, other than him being incredibly kind to me, you and I have been with Geddy a couple of times backstage, being nice, taking a picture. We're in pictures together with the band. But I was in front of my home. Matter of fact, I was right here, if you're looking on the video, right below where the E is in Baltimore Positive. All-Star Weekend, 93 in Baltimore. I was credentialed back when I was in the real media. And the All-Star Gala was Monday night, ESPN broadcast live. And the gala was literally at the Science Center. And it was indoor-outdoor. And it was all like Eastern Shore seafood. And they had put up outside on the walkway. I always say to Jen, when we're walking in front of the Science Center, because I live right here, I'm always like, bumped into Geddy over there. Talked to Geddy.
Awesome.
You know, I was in a buffet. And listen, this is true. I did not really know Geddy Lee was in town. I did not really connect with, he was singing the national anthem. Like I did not connect any of that. In any way, I wasn't looking for him in any way. And I was at a buffet with crab, corn on the cob, and there was no one there. And it was like an outdoor faux buffet under a tent. And it was a little tent. There were little tents set up with different food. The desserts were over there. The salad was over there. This was the tent that had a little bit of corn and crab. And I had a plate and I'm on the buffet. And there's four people. And it was a little 12 by 12 tent. There was nobody in it. And I'm in the buffet with my fork and I looked up. And I was with David Hill, who had Outside Pitch for a long time. And he was bemoaning his girlfriend at the time, I remember, singing the blues. And I looked up and Geddy Lee is in the line next to me. And I looked at him and I'm like, I didn't even know what to say. I was a little frozen. You know what I mean? Like, And I didn't want to fanboy out too much. He signed my gala ticket. So the cool. Back of the ticket, it just, you know, it's his signature. And I put that in an auction. It's been in a box, dude. It's been in a box for 29 years. I don't display this stuff. I relish my sweatshirt. I love the bobblehead you gave me. I don't know if I ever get a place with something to display it. But all of this stuff that I've collected, you know, the auction's this week, by the way. I mean, I could put, by the way, the number one thing in the auction that's selling for the most amount of money isn't anything Rush or Paul McCartney or Billy Joel or David Bowie. The number one auction item right now is the back of a ticket that the Beastie Boys signed in 1987. And cool. I don't know why. I the auctioneer told me, like, you're going to get your feelings hurt because your Rush stuff's going to sell for or whatever. And I'm like, my feelings aren't involved in this. I just want someone to display it, enjoy it, have it on the wall, and not have it. I lost a Rush autograph. I had a Jack Wagon mount my stuff many years ago and destroyed some of it when I begged them not to destroy it. When I gave it to them, I'm like, if you destroy this, I will come back and hate on you for the rest of my life. And I have a Rush autograph picture that's destroyed because it was mounted poorly. So, you know, across time, some of this stuff has survived. Other stuff, sadly, like baseball cards, you know, mom threw them out or whatever. Tapes are missing and stuff. But the Rush experience for me, and this is where I'll open it. I really want you to talk about your experience a little bit. But when I think about Rush concerts and being there, the thing that struck me all these years later is how solitary Rush has been for me in my life. Almost like a church I go to that no one else goes to, that the only time you go to the church is when you go to the concert, because you don't get together with your friend. You and I have been Rush fans all of our lives, and we don't say, hey, man, let's open a bottle of wine and jam this in Rush tonight over at the house. You know, right. Like, we just don't like. So I've been listening to Rush, and when I think of Rush, I think of my own air drum, my own air bass, my own air guitar, my own singing where nobody listens, my own world, because it is not a present thing, because you do not hear Rush anywhere, but maybe in the car when you're alone, hearing Limelight on the radio or whatever. Ever, right? Like, that is the weirdest part as a 52-year-old man that doesn't want to admit how geeky I may or may not be about collectibles or about any of that kind of 40-year-old virgin stuff, right? I would just say that's the hardest part and the best part for Rush for me, because it is so, so personal to me. Because I, with Led Zeppelin, I go places and hear it places and journey, and people sing Don't Stop Believing out loud at football games now. Rush is a different experience, bro.
So you said the perfect word. It's personal. You know, I'm 52 years old. I got married late to a great, wonderful woman. I have a son. His name is Alex. Yes, after somehow, some way, my wife went with Alex. But before that, I had work and I had my life. I had ups and downs. One thing that's always been constant has been Rush for me. They've been the, you know, Geddy says the biggest cult band, and you know, he calls them that.
Well, the Grateful Dead, you know, there are bands like that. You know, like, yeah. I think Dylan's very much an acquired taste. I mean, you mentioned Genesis. Yes. Any of sort of the proggy things channeled almost like boy bands, you know what, yeah. I mean, like, it's a genre, but Rush isn't really a genre. Rush is like a thing, you know what I mean, yeah. Like, and to see these kids, this Greta Van Offel, like, I don't need any of that, and I don't even need Geddy and Alex to go out and shake their ass with Dave Grohl playing drums, although that would be nice, you know what I mean, I'd be fine with that. I'm learning to become okay with the finality of not seeing them live. But what I've really relished, and I know you know this, because this is probably why you're on the show right now, why I've geeked out on this, is the plague has made me very insulated and very longing for something other than just Exit Stage Left, which I've seen. This is a song about a car. This is called the Red Barchetta. So I don't need that anymore. But finding a boot from the Spectrum on the Grace Under Pressure tour at a show I was at and booted myself, not nearly that well, that's off the board, where Geddy's singing in a range he doesn't have anymore, and the eras of their music and how he sings differently, they play differently. They play Closer to the Heart as a reggae song at one point. You know, they really are a serious XM station unto themselves for how much and how well they were booted in ways that now, 40 years later, I'm happy they were as booted as well as they were.
Yeah, it's so funny because, you know, a lot of people have their Rush time. They love the early stuff. They love the middle stuff. When you get somebody like me that I love 99% of the stuff. There's,
what don't you like?
I'm not crazy about, I mean, and it's quality.
I didn't like Hold Your Fire, by the way. So
I love it.
Okay.
I love it.
Maybe I need to go back and read. This is where it is. Stuff like that, if I go back and rediscover things, that's what's been cool this last year, is going back and really listening to Signals and Power Windows. I haven't even mentioned Power Windows, dude, yeah. Right? Like, that's the cut my teeth Rush stuff. 81, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, where I was into music like you wouldn't believe. But Rush were my Ravens. They were my Houston Oilers, you know, at that point. Yeah. And those albums came out like clockwork, like a clockwork, yeah. Angels. And I appreciate that. I say to my wife all the time, like, the words, Neil Peart was a freaking genius. And I'm so disappointed that I never stalked him down or elbow bumped him. He would have hated me. And I love that he talked as much as he did, because I always felt a little cheated by him, a little, you know, as a fan, I felt a little cheated. But now in retrospect, there's a whole body of work on YouTube. You can sit for hours and listen to Neil Peart speak, right? Very, very, very eloquently and intelligently. And he's left books behind and postcards that he mailed to people like you from the road. And my God, like, I could probably spend the next 25 years doing one good book on Neil Peart, if I live that long, to encompass it. Some, I hope somebody does that, because like, he's worth that.
Well, it's funny. Hold your fire. So my first record that I kind of followed was Grace Under Pressure, and I got tons of that I could talk about there. But Hold Your Fire, I want to go back to 98 Rock and Chris Emery. I'm hearing Chris Emery talking on the air, and he's like, we've got the new Rush for you, blah, 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 selling it. And we'll be playing it for you tomorrow morning starting at 8 o'clock. I called him because I would call in and I would, you know, like you, I called you early on at the News American and be like, dude, how do you know Rush is playing, you know, December 4th at the Cap Center? Those
types. Do you really do that?
Oh, I totally did.
You called me when you were a kid asking me about Rush.
Yeah, there was some dude, and I don't want to get away from this Hold Your Fire story, but I definitely, you were News American, Evening Sun, and there was some dude, and I thought I knew a good bit about, you know, Rush back then, and, you know, back then it wasn't like today. You had to dig and dig and dig for any Rush info.
You had to get Circus Magazine.
Yeah. Well,
literally, right?
And, you know, once in a while you would find...
You waited for the liner notes, and you just read them again and again and again, right? Literally.
So you would have, like, Rush December 4th, you know, and I'm like, how is this guy doing it? So I called you, and you're like, you told me I know somebody.
Her name was Sherry Ring at PolyGram Records, and she was an angel to me, and she loved me. And when Bon Jovi broke, he was on PolyGram, so I was the first one to sit with Bon Jovi, which is why. So, you know, I've had relationships with people my whole life, but, you know, I got
my PolyGram angel. My PolyGram angel is Donna Jean.
Oh, Donna Jean Rumley. Hey, DJ, my girl.
Anyway, I want to get back to this Chris Emery story. I call him, and he's like, and I begged him. I said, please, can you record that song for me, and I could have it tonight? And he said, come to the station. It's yours. So that night, I got that cassette. I don't know if he's.
I love Chris Emery. So when you tell me, you know, like, I love Chris Emery. Yeah. So, you know,
so
Chris knows that.
I'm not a pack rat, but my Rush stuff means something to me.
Aha.
That night I went home and I wrote down all the words to the song.
Wow. What song was it?
Force 10.
Force 10. Okay. Tough times. Great the man, song. Tough talk. The man, tough
great
times.
Great song. So, you know, when you mentioned that, Hold Your Fire. Yeah. Alex is, you know, not
in tough times, demand tough talk.
Yeah. It's a great song. Then you go to Time Stand Still. If you're,
oh my God,
you
know, by the way, this is why this is good. This project's going to be fun for me. Not just having you on, right? You just said that to me, Time Stand Still. I need to get Amy Mann on the show.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like that. Totally. And that's a doable, that's not like getting Bono on. Amy Mann will come on this show if I figure out how to get her on the show.
And
I want to talk to Amy Mann about that. Yes.
And you got to ask her about that video.
Oh my. Yeah. But, yeah. So I'm not looking back, but I want to look around me now.
Yeah.
See more of the people and the places that remind me. Yeah.
Ryan. Yep. You know, it's just beautiful stuff. And, you know, there's like Lock and Key on that record. And there's Turn the Page. I don't know how well you know that one. Listen to that today and crank that up about every day.
So I need to do that. And I did that a lot. And I'll tell you, in the last couple of weeks, my wife was gone. And when my wife leaves, I crank Rush up. I mean, and it's not offensive to my wife that I do or don't. It's just Rush needs to be played at a volume. And I don't want an audience. I just like want to play it. I don't want anybody around. Like literally, I don't want you here. As much fun as it might be, if you came over, we wind up talking. And I really want to talk when I'm listening to Limelight off of the, you know, Power Windows tour from Quebec at Le Colisée that I found on YouTube from the summer of 88. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So I've gone through the boots and they're all pretty good, but more than that, and the thing that pissed me off and I lost some interest in the band at a period of time was I felt like the set list, I felt like they weren't mixing stuff up. And then in the end, they raced to the finish line. The last 10 years, every tour, they went out of their way to pull out Natural Science. They went out of their way to finally play Fly By Night. They went out of their, you know, they did all of this different stuff that they never played. They brought back, they did the whole album, right? They did Moving Pictures. They just did cool stuff at the end. In so many, I say to my wife, the artistry of their albums, the artistry of the concerts, the videos, the Jerry Stiller stuff, like all of the Gershons, the Pork Factory, the making fun of their lineage with paying homage to their lineage, you know, all of the stuff that they did, the Lurs, the Dirks, like all of the wild, weird stuff about them. I've never been as geeky as you to dive into every morsel. Like my buddy Scotty P and his family, they're really into Springsteen. Like they know a lot about Springsteen. And I've read the book now and I went – by the way, Chris Emery is the reason I got to see Springsteen on Broadway. Chris bought tickets, had a change of heart, sold them to me. I sat in the eighth row one time, spent too much, loved it. Didn't love it for how much I spent, but I loved it. And, you know, you have these experiences with bands. I'm a little embarrassed I didn't see them more. And I probably saw Rush 80 times, maybe 70, you know, like, I don't know. The last tour, I have regrets about not going to the Forum. As you know, I did the whole thing. But this last month, the really cool part has been finding songs between the wheels, just songs that I haven't really listened to in 30 years. You know, the Body Electric, stuff that
after.
And I'm not all limelighted out or Tom Sawyered out in any way, right? I mean, I may be a little bit more Red Barchetted out or a little bit more esoteric stuff that I like that maybe some people wouldn't like, but the thing that I need to do is rediscover Clockwork, you know, go back to the stuff that I didn't listen to so much, maybe some Presto stuff that I didn't listen to so much, and find the B cuts and consider that sort of new music at this point. Like, I didn't listen to Getty's solo album much, right? And now there are many, many tribute to Rush songs and things out there too. There's a whole album, right? That I'm interested in that stuff at this point as much as I am in bothering poor Getty to come on the show, or Alex, and I'd love to have them on. You're invited. But I want to get the Donna Halpers and you and Amy Mann and, you know, find people associated with the band to come on and talk about them, because I think that's the way I'm going to learn about the band.
When you talked about, you know, the set list, and I, you know, in a lot of ways, I felt the same way. I'm like, come on, man. And I know that they're playing songs that meant a lot to them, like Red Sector A, great song. But, you know,
I love Red Sector A.
Yeah, but they're great. You know, they're great musicians. And I know it's a lot about the stage and, you know, choreographic and the lighting. Howard Ungerleiter, you know, one of the best lighting people ever. So, you know, and he was Rush's guy. So I understand they couldn't deviate so much from their set list,
from the norm.
But yeah, exactly. But
I'm going to do that the whole conversation.
Yeah, I love
because
it.
I'm nuts.
So yeah. When it was R30 and you and I went to R30, I don't know if you remember this or not. And we stayed at your buddy Jim Schwartz's house
in Nashville.
Yes.
Okay.
And when they pulled out early in the set, Digital Man, and I think Circumstances, and they started with one of the greatest overtures ever with, like, you know, from Finding My Way, you know, to, you know, Anthem. And they just, with no music, with lyrics in it. I don't know if you remember this or not on R30.
It was an overture. Really, yeah. I watched the R30 video a lot. Yeah. Yes.
And then it goes right into Spirit of Radio. That's the first, you know, song that they played with lyrics. And then they go into Digital Man. And that's at that time, you know, it was the R30 years in. And me, that was the one song, one of the top 8 to 10 songs that I always want to see, and Rush fans always want to see that. Jacob's Bladder, you know, The Camera Eye, all these B-side songs that, you know, we loved a lot of the staple Rush songs, subdivisions, but we wanted to dig in a little bit further and hear, you know, Jacob's Ladder or
see for me a couple weeks ago. I busted out an old tour where they were doing the trilogy back in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, and I haven't listened to a lot of that stuff, right? So pulling that out, it's just not hearing Tom Sawyer Limelight in the car, you know, and I love that stuff, but I'm almost done with versions I know. I want to hear various tours, various ranges of Getty's voice, and, you know, even when Neil got his chops going and sort of mixed things up a little bit, and even the drum solos were always so, and I'm not a drummer, but the stuff that he did with Presto and that era, mixing the big band stuff up and Superconductor. We can sit here and talk all night. Scott Norton's my guest. We're talking Rush here and geezing a little bit about the old rock and roll. And, you know, for you, you don't like have any other bands that you're nuts about. I could probably do this on 50 different bands, but not in the way that Rush and Styx were sort of my first, maybe even Journey, you know, to that sort of REO Speedwagon. Those were the bands that I loved in 79, 80, 81. But to still love it all these years later and to still find real value in it, like tremendous value in listening to New World Man for me.
It's got rocket sauce in it.
Yeah. So let's geek out now. Do you think the boys are going to tour? You know, I mean, do you think they're going to do anything? I get the vibe. Alex looks tired. You know what I mean? Getty looks vibrant. I don't think Getty wants to run around with a new band and younger people and whatever and play Rush songs. I don't think he has any interest in doing that. So I think there will come a point where I will be in a room where Getty will perform at a Hall of Fame, something like sitting in for Yes at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Had I known he was going to do that, I may have gone. I went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame the next year, the year that, Stevie Nicks, The Cure, Def Leppard, Radiohead, that was the one I went to, and the Jam was the worst Jam of all time. Ian Hunter doing all the Young Dudes of Terror. It was off key. It was at 2 a.m. Don't watch it. It was a letdown. It was like a bad Super Bowl. But Getty will do that kind of stuff. And I, you know what, man, if the Foo Fighters said to Getty, do you want to go out and bang out 28 shows, make some money and play your songs, do you want to do it? You know what I mean? Like that would be something where they would sell stadiums.
Yeah,
and they would have an homage to Neil in the way that Bruce did a thing every night for Clarence. If they, you know, if they wanted to do something that was orchestral, I could see Getty going out with an or. Getty's got a lot of life. Knock on wood, you know. I thought Neil had a lot of life. It feels to me like Getty's going to have 15 more years where he's going to be able to show up and do some things that a fan's going to be able to pay a couple $100 and participate in. And you know, my thing with Getty, about 2 years ago, the bass book came out.
Yeah.
I had a ticket online for the Philadelphia bookstore thing, $100 and get the book. And I threw it back. I hadn't, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, do I really want to spend 8 hours to go stand in line to fist bump Getty to get a book? And it was football season. It was like 2 years ago, maybe. And I didn't even do it. And it wasn't even about money, or it was just more about like, let someone else go love Getty. You know what I mean? Like I wanted someone else to have that ticket that it meant more to meeting Getty. You know, I did that experience to meet Springsteen a couple years ago. It was wonderful. And I just got rid of the book because I'm afraid of messing the book up.
Well, on that tour, that book tour. And I remember we were talking about it and we were chatting like through text that Getty and Alex did like this sit down interview with Getty
in Toronto, at the right?
Hall of Fame. I had a ticket.
Cleveland, that's right.
I had a ticket, and I was in the queue.
Snowed like crazy that day, didn't it, in Cleveland?
Yeah. I don't remember, but I had a ticket, and then all of a sudden, it just shut me out, and the ticket said, sorry, and I was like 10th in line in queue. Sorry, the tickets are sold out. I wasn't crazy about driving all the way out there to Cleveland just for this and then coming right back, but I was going to do it, and boom.
It was on video. I mean, so I've seen it, right? So, that's how I felt interactive with it, you know? I love the band so much, and I know you do too. And I'm glad we haven't talked about the death of Neil too much, because it would be weird, right? Like, it's, you know, that's a moment that we don't, like, necessarily. I want to move past that and just enjoy the music.
I agree. The whole, what were we saying before? About
obscure songs?
Yeah, well, I forget what you were talking about, but
I take notes.
Yeah, I know I should. Oh, that's what I was going to tell you with the whole Getty and Alex. I think there's Lee and Lifeson possibly. I know currently, you know, Alex did about like 7 or 8 songs with the guy in the band. What were they? The guy Andy Curran. Played with.
Well, I saw the interview with Alex. He did an extensive interview. Yeah.
So he played on some of these Andy Curran songs, and So, and that was Andy Curran is the guy that introduced their Rush's last producer, Nick Raskolnitz of, I guess he did the Foo Fighters' first record or so, but he introduced those Getty, Alex, and Neil to Nick Raskolnitz. They did their last two records, which go back, they're good. Clockwork Angels is a work of art for dudes that are 60 years old, I'm telling you. And then, so Alex is doing that, but Getty and Dave Grohl are good buddies. And there's a book out called Cradle to Stage. And there's actually going to be like, you look it up.
Yeah,
and,
Getty's mother's doing it, right? It's a bunch of artists with their mothers. Exactly. I told my wife about that. Yeah.
So that should be pretty cool. You know, so
Getty and Getty's mother hanging out with Dave Grohl and Dave Grohl's mother.
Yep. So, and she looks like a blast. If you watch Beyond the Lighted Stage, she, you know, she didn't get what Getty was doing back then, but she seems like a sweet, sweet lady and, you know, just like her son, you know, like.
By the way, man, I got to borrow your DVD from the last tour. I've never watched it. I didn't watch it before Neil died. You know, like, because everybody told me it was kind of sad. Right. And, but it's also the concert that you and I attended in Chicago when I bought this at the United Center and Getty and Alex, by the way, I mean, I should pull that picture up, man, because like you sent me that picture last week. Good. That, because I had never, literally, I had never seen the picture. Right. I have the picture of me with the swab. But, oh man, you got some really awkward young pictures of you with Getty. I love that. That's awesome.
Well, that was also from the Hold Your Fire tour, where these balloons right here came down out of the ceiling. And, you know, I was part of that, you know, I have a good buddy, Joe Pastorio, who was like, if it wasn't for Joe, most of my Rush stuff wouldn't happen, because he was like, come on, we're doing it. And he was like you know, like, come on, let's do it. But the Hold Your Fire thing, I cornered that where Getty looks like he's mad as, you know, mad as can be. I cornered him like a rat. And to
poor
this
Getty.
Day,
look at that. You should regret
day,
that.
Getty, if you're watching, I'm so sorry, because I was like a kid in the candy store and he was.
You
he
have no idea how embarrassed I would be if the tape ever surfaced of my first conversation with Getty Lee. I mean, you know, it's crazy. And by the way, and this is going to be some pure weirdness in all of this. Fritz Mondale died this week. I was literally backstage. You can look this night up. I was backstage at the Philadelphia Spectrum the night that Fritz Mondale got routed by Ronald Reagan on the Grace Under Pressure tour. I had a backstage pass that night. I met Getty for the second time that night. I had met him at the Capitol Center earlier in the week. He was playing catch. And then I went to the Philadelphia show and they invited me backstage. A guy named Kevin Fluitt, Fluitt. Yeah. You'll see his name at the end of the exit stage left. He's on those albums. Was my
personal Shreve.
Personal Shreve. Exactly. He was my, so I met Getty in the same awkward way you have that picture. I had a very awkward, very late, very 12:30 in the morning, way after the show, way after the loadout, way after everybody left, on his way out of the arena, icing down. Hello with Getty Lee at the Philadelphia Spectrum the night that Fritz Mondale lost. So there is your United States history in Baltimore positive all brought in. Hey, thanks for making me get the sweatshirt. I do owe you for that. And we've had some good times together. Hopefully some more good times together with Rush. Hope to see you at a Ravens game or an Oriole game, okay?
Hey, yep. Hey,
kids are good. How's little Alex doing? Good?
Alex he's got his first clinic baseball team playing for the Brewers. But hey, can I say one or two more things?
Yeah, we got plenty
Rush
of time here. Sure, man.
So you talked about Neil Peart. I had one meeting with Neil, and that was also
that must have been awkward.
The night of this, the night that I cornered Getty earlier in the day, we blew up the balloons. Neil walks by a couple times. By the third time, he stops.
This is the Capitol Center. Hold Your Fire.
This is Hampton, Virginia.
Oh, the Scope.
Yep, went down there once again with my boy Joe. Drove, you know, he used to be a DJ on 97 Underground. I don't know if you remember that one. Crazy underground metal radio station. We drove down there to Hampton, Virginia. We go through the front door.
97 Underground was in my high school at Dundalk High. So I know all about it.
Yeah. So Joe P, you know, Joey Jam.
Joey Jam. So,
anyway, finally, Neil stops. And this is a story. I'm sorry that I kind of crushed this in, but this is a story that I've, it's, it means a lot to me. And I love sharing it with people. I'm a Countdown guy. I've always loved the song Countdown from Signals. They apparently over the years grew not to like it. So by the third time Neil walks by, he's got this loose hooded sweatshirt on, you know, looks like about 10 feet tall.
Did you know enough to know that he hated it at this point or no? Did you not?
I read it in a magazine.
And that he didn't like it?
What I said to him.
Okay.
And I think I told you this story before. And I said, Neil, he's like, yeah, what's up? So he stops and I'm like, oh my God, it's Neil Peart. So I said, hey, Neil, I heard that you didn't like the song Countdown. I read it in a magazine and I was just wondering what you would do differently. And he looked at me, shrugged his shoulders and said, not do it, and walked away. And to this day, you know, like, I don't get it. Cause you know, so that's one thing. The other thing that I want to tell that I don't think gets enough love and attention are the people that were on Rush's road crew, like Tony Geranios and, you know, guys that, you know, if you're at a show back in like the mid to late, probably early 2000s, whatever, and they would always start off with Spirit of Radio. And the guy that would come out on stage, look kind of like Geddy Lee, would hit the bass pedal and you would hear from Spirit of Radio. That dude, if it wasn't for him, I would have never gotten this prize Snakes and Arrows pick.
Nice.
And he would just stop and talk to you. And these guys were like royalty. Him, Howard Ungerleiter, you could sit there and talk to him. Because I knew I was never going to have...
I knew Howard a little bit.
Or sit down and talk to these guys. But Howard would be accessible back by the light, you know, rig. And you could talk to him. And he'd be like, yeah, man. And, you know, just tell him what you thought. And they were so cool. And, you know...
Well, you know, to some degree, all these people sit at home waiting to go on a tour, right? Like, you know, to some degree, this is their Super Bowl too. And they know it's important to you. And I would say this about Rush. Every night I ever went, they came, they brought it, the lights worked, the sound worked, all of that. And they always had the same people. They were always kind to me. I mean, obviously, Geddy would call into this lunatic's fans radio show in Baltimore and talk baseball, you know, every spring. So I am indebted in that way. And yeah, I am sad that I didn't have a weird moment with Neil, but in some degree, living on a lighted stage approaches the unreal. You know, I'm kind of happy I left him alone to some degree, but but now the exploration of his work. And I know I mentioned this to Carolina Mike when he was on, we stayed with this really stately, wonderful, educated man in Canada and up near Nova Scotia. And he was, you know, not a rock and roll guy, but I said, you know, the Neil Peart stuff, the just the words, forget the music, forget Geddy screaming, forget Alex, forget all of that. Forget all the imagery. If you just read the words as a poet, there's great appreciation for the work of Neil Peart. And that's aside from what kind of drummer he was, because everybody wants to talk about that.
Right.
When they talk about Neil Peart, they talk about, oh, he drummed, he was a recluse, he, you know, all of that. I'm a man about words, you know what I mean? Like, literally, there'll never be anything like that ever again.
Amen. Yep. Yeah.
Hey, dude, appreciate you. Love you. Stay safe. You know, make little Neils and Alex's and Gettys and name fish after them. Do whatever you need to do. You know, keep it happy. Appreciate you and your wife. Also, hope to see you at a Ravens game without a mask soon.
Yeah, man. You know, I'll come over and I'll find you and say hey to you.
Scott Norton, my lifer Rush pal that I once stowed away at Jim Schwartz's house in Nashville to go to the Rush 30. Hey, I do need to borrow that DVD. I want to stash out your DVD collection for two weeks and just go at it. Yeah. I need to do that in May because my wife's going to see her sister. So it allows me to turn the music up here.
All right. And I got drum videos from Neil. You'll love it.
Let's not get too geeky. No, you know, I don't need to have all that. I'm not learning to play the drums. You know.
I love talking about Rush. Thank you, man. This has been totally great.
Therapeutic it is at this point,
totally.
I think.
Absolutely.
Scott Norton joining us here, a fellow Rush fans and geeking out here. It's springtime around here. We got draft. We got politics. We got baseball. We got football. Got hockey. That's Canadian sport.
Mm-hmm. Hey, go Caps.
Hey, man, there'll never be another O Canada like there was at Camden Yards back in July 1993. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop geeking out about music and sports and stuff. It's Baltimore Positive.